This is the fourth case of the morning. This is Swedenborg and Swedenborg versus Gonzalez. And Mr. Mwangi.
May it please the court, Godfrey Mwangi for the petitioners. Another motion case from the board.
Mr. Mwangi, we should correct our docket, should we not? They're the Pablos, really?
Yes, the last name is Pablo.
Okay.
And Amelia is the wife, and Swedenborg is the husband.
Okay, so it's actually the surname is Pablo. I just want
Pablo, P-A-B-L-O, and that was our error in the beginning. It just seems natural that the longer name should be the surname, but it's the first name. This is a motion to reopen that was filed after the board had issued its decision December 4th of 2002, but the decision had gone to the wrong address and apparently gone back to the board.
Can I just ask you something off the bat? Why wasn't an argument made about ineffective assistance of counsel in the lawyer's failure to give the INS the correct address? I mean, he was disbarred at the time, and it seems it would have been a viable argument to make.
Your Honor, it was considered, but I did not deem that appropriate because under the circumstances, the lawyer had the address that he provided the board. And ineffective assistance of counsel, to me, would have consisted of something that, if I looked at it, would have seemed either derelict or intentional. And it did not seem to me that this was intentional, especially under the circumstances, because he, as he was facing suspension, was being assisted by a couple of other counsel who came in and took over some of the caseload, and at one point or another might have handled part of this case. There's a notice of appearance in the record from another counsel, and when I investigated this, I was never able to figure out who exactly prepared the response to the board, which the counsel signed, and I was never able to establish if prior counsel actually prepared it himself and signed it. It is his signature. He acknowledges that, but I was never able to establish that he had actually prepared the substance of that submission to the board. Therefore, I couldn't really pin ineffective assistance on him. And because of the circumstances, I did not feel that it would be fair or appropriate. But also, the Pablos were in a state of moving from their old house to the new house. And so in that state of moving, it was not clear to me how they had communicated to him or whether they had communicated with the other counsel who were helping this counsel. And I couldn't really figure out whose error this was to be able to come to a conclusion that I should file an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. And that's, you know, that was a situation in which I didn't think I had the facts to do that.
But wouldn't you agree, counsel to one side, that it is the applicants themselves who also have a duty to keep the board apprised as to their present address. You know, it's logical to require them to do so. The board can't chase people all over the country. And these people got a statement and various things they received that said, you must tell us if you've moved.
Your Honor, there's nothing specific that they got after they had left the immigration judge's court, which was in 1998, if I recall correctly, that instructed them to advise the board what their new address was if they moved.
The government argues that from the very start, though, they were receiving things. One of them happens to be on page 8 of the government's brief that says you're required to provide written notice within 5 days of any change in your address, that Mr. Pablo signed that. And why would you think that duty had expired somehow is the question I would ask.
Your Honor, as has been discussed in other cases today, that assumes aliens who are familiar with processes of law and who...
But what's so fancy? I mean, the earlier cases were one thing. This is just, you have to tell us your address. Where can you be contacted? That's not hyper-technical.
It is not technical, Judge, and I concede that, but these are people who at one point are represented, at another point are not represented. And that
they speak English fluently, right?
I believe they do. Yes,
do.
They do, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And these warnings were given some years prior. Yes, the government points to those warnings, but those warnings are given years prior.
But why would you forget about something that important? Wouldn't you want to make sure that the immigration authorities could find you once they've adjudicated your case so you can take proper measures?
In a perfect world, I think everybody would want the immigration officials to know where they are. And
I mean, at least if they're not trying to stay underground altogether, and these people weren't. They had an application. They were engaged in the process.
It would make absolutely no sense, especially in their case, because here we are, and they're at a very, very huge disadvantage. And so logic suggests that they would have wanted the board to know where they are. And so I can't imagine a reason why they would, on their own volition, want the board to not know where they are. And so I can't answer your question because I really don't know.
The board has no rule about represented parties that would forbid them from writing on their own, even if they thought their attorney was going to do it, does it?
The board doesn't forbid that. The board doesn't forbid represented parties from communicating with it. It prefers that counsel communicate on behalf of counsel's clients, but doesn't forbid that. I don't know of any rule that says that. The board did write counsel say you've provided no address for your clients, and that is contrary to matter of Rosales.
Right.
And that was remedied. And at the time the board made the decision, of course, they moved. The envelope apparently found its way back to the board. And the board denied the motion, saying, go over to the service. If the service agrees to join your motion, maybe we'll consider it reopen. The service said no, absent evidence that the envelope was never delivered, we are not going to jump.
That part seemed absurd. I agree with you about that. If the envelope was never delivered to them, it would be hard for them to produce it.
And
But
the board never goes back to address that promise that if the service joins, we'll consider it. They never address that. Instead, they pick up on the service's argument that since they never departed, they're not entitled to any relief. Well, the order giving them voluntary departure is in the envelope that went back to the board. How do they know they have to depart if the envelope was never delivered? And so that's the crux, I think, of what we believe is arbitrary and capricious about the board's denial of reopening in this case. Yes, They did not inform the board that they had moved. They did not inform the board of their new address. But I think it might be a lapse in judgment. It might be just sheer forgetfulness. But I think they had no reason to, you know, actively or voluntarily or intentionally conceal their whereabouts from the board, because they had an interest. They wanted something. And so wanting to the board to know where they are is something that was in their best interests, and they wouldn't have intentionally concealed their whereabouts.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Levy?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Jennifer Levy. I'm here on behalf of Respondent Alberto Gonzalez. I'm from the Criminal Division of the Justice Department.
You know, normally, of course, we impute a lawyer's error to the client in a civil case. But are you aware of imputing a lawyer's error to the client when the lawyer is disbarred? It seems like a rather unwise rule in the context of immigration, because the stakes are so high.
Well, I would agree with that, Your Honor, except the facts here are interesting, that the disbarred lawyer filed this notice on July 21st, 2001, or previous to that, earlier in July, and the board sent back a notice acknowledging receipt of the change of address or the information of the last known address, and CC'd Mr. Pablo on that at the first address. Now, what hasn't been said here is that there is no evidence in the record and no argument of counsel that Mr. Pablo did not receive that acknowledgement from the board, which CC'd him with the first address, where he would have known that the board was operating under the assumption that he still lived at that address. The fact that he did not then try to contact the board, knowing that he was not represented by counsel at that point, that it wouldn't be his obligation to inform the board that they had moved, were in the process of moving, whatever their circumstances were, is a little bit remarkable. Because, again, they were in the position of either retaining new counsel or continuing pro se. If they were going to continue pro se, how was the board to find them if they were not at the address that was provided as their last known address? And when they received that notice that was sent by the board in July of 2001, clearly that would have shown them that the board was operating under the assumption that all correspondence, and in fact the decision of the board, which was contained in the letter, was saying the decision of the board would be sent to the alien. So it's rather remarkable and an incredible onus to expect the board to try to find where this alien would be if for some reason the alien did not receive subsequent notices. So that's as a first point. The second is, In fact, the whole issue of the envelope appears to the government to be a red herring here. There's really no evidence conclusively establishing that this is, in fact, an envelope that was returned to the board that contained a novel decision of the board that was never received by the alien.
But Ms. Levy, I agree with you that at least the photocopy that shows up that I've looked at is quite inconclusive. But the one thing that troubled me was this statement in the service lawyer's letter saying, "We won't join your motion to reopen unless you provide us with the envelope," when the definition is that we didn't get it. You know, how are they supposed to respond to that? Is this a typical requirement on the service's part?
I would venture to say the answer is no. But in fact, the alien didn't provide any evidence to support the assertion. No affidavit whatsoever.
So all they need, this is the classic proving of a negative.
Right.
And so are you saying that it was simply the failure to include in the letter a sworn affidavit? We never received anything from the board that would have turned this around, that would have made the service... I just don't know, given access to information, how somebody who never got a letter, other than an affidavit, frankly, could verify that.
Well, in fact, they could have easily submitted an affidavit. That's one answer. But whether that was the reason that the service wouldn't join is not apparent, except for the fact that this case has been in litigation for 10 years.
Well, except for the fact that that's the reason the service lawyer stated in his letter.
Yes.
I mean, so why should, you know, other than pure speculation, I think we have to take him at his word.
Perhaps, but...
So he's asking for the impossible. You can see how they would be a little flummoxed.
Perhaps that is the case, but the fact remains that the service is not required to join that petition, and the service had their reasons for not joining that petition, and it just appears that
but you can't mean that. I mean, if the service lawyer had said the reason we're not joining your petition is that you didn't enclose $500 bills, you would say, well, of course. I mean, that's not a valid reason for refusing to join the commission. You can't insist on a bribe.
Absolutely.
And there are other reasons that might be so absurd. We've decided not to join your motion because I'm going to be busy next week on vacation. You know, that would not be, although not illegal, not an appropriate reason to refuse.
Although this is all because the aliens did not follow the appropriate time frame that is set up for this whole process. So this is an exceptional circumstance that would have allowed additional consideration above and beyond the time limitations that were set and known to the aliens for the whole process that they'd been involved in. Mm-hmm. Are there any further questions?
Okay, thank you. Your time's expired. The case will be taken under advisement.